Blog Talk Radio.
You're live. Good morning, everyone. Coast to coast. This is the Council of Elders.
You didn't mess that. You put too many buttons, man.
Can you hear me?
Yeah,
yes, we can.
Can we get started? I'll go ahead and get started if it's okay. Good morning, everybody.
Okay,
you're listening to the Council of Elders show. My name is Jansen Brooks, and I want to welcome and thank everybody for calling this week to the Council of Elders program. Now, for you new listeners, I'd like to explain the purpose of the Council of Elders concept. The purpose is for older people, elders, to give advice, counsel, and life experience to younger people, advice that can help them navigate successfully through life, deal with issues, and avoid some of the pitfalls that can affect everyone. The concept is based historically on African culture, where elders in the community had council members to help guide tribe members, settle disputes, etc. Young people are especially invited to call in with questions or issues. My dream is to have a Council of Elders group or organization every community in America, and for the Council of Elders to be known about in the community so that people could have an opportunity to get advice from elders about their concerns. But it first starts with a single Council of Elders group. So I'm assembling a group of elders here in the Sacramento, California area. I'd like to have about 10 volunteers. Once we get enough volunteers, we can go to youth centers, juvenile halls, boys and girls clubs, and churches. We can also be available to young adults as well. Sometimes they need advice on how to raise kids, how to get along in their careers, their marriages, etc. Moving forward, this is an effort to bridge the gap between young people and elders. The younger generation today and the older generation should start to merge. The Council of Elders is an effort to do so. The Council of Elders concept and vision that I have here is somewhat of a unique experience. We are trying to bridge the gap between young and old. What's going on with the younger generation? How can we as elders be of value to younger people? What do young people feel that the older people need to know? And what do elders feel that younger people need to know? And to start off today, I want to pay homage to Mr. John Brown, who got me started in this effort. And we have a new technical person, Mr. Oscar Besant, taking over the technical aspects of the show. I want to thank both of you gentlemen. We have an exciting guest on the show today. But first, let me introduce everyone on the panel. We'll start with Walter Williams.
Good morning, everyone. This is Walter Williams, Jr. I presently reside in Alabaster, Alabama. I'm a retired 38-year law enforcement executive, and I thank Mr. Brooks for this platform, and I thank God for giving it to him.
Okay, Mr. John Brown, you're going to be with us today. You want to have a few words. You're my mentor in the business.
Yeah, you guys, I mean, this is really great. I am so proud of you. You know, I know we're not supposed to be proud, you know, but I am so, I can't find the words to say it. You know, just keep up the good work, and, you know, all of you guys, y'all going to go a long ways, okay? Going to go a long ways. Anytime I can help, y'all, please feel free to chat.
Okay, okay. Want to have you as a guest on the show in a couple of weeks, John. Okay. Oscar Besant, would you introduce yourself briefly?
My name is Oscar Besant, Sacramento, California.
I'm a retired military NCO. I've been involved in communications for 50-plus years. I was a radio and television chair for St. Paul Baptist Church for 27 years. I've been involved with television. I worked at Channel 3 for a while. I'm fully aware of communications, and it would take too long for me to give you my history. But I love the Lord, and I love the Council of Elders concept. And I, when Mr. Brooks told me about this program, I said that he was a godsend to me, because actually I had planned to do something in the junior high schools with the old geezers that come by my house. And I had asked them about doing it. And I heard Mr. Brooks's program, and I said, well, why should I reinvent the wheel? Why don't I just help him push his wheel? So God bless you, Mr. Brooks. I love the concept, and anything I can do to help you, I'm available. Just pick up the phone.
Okay. All right. Thank you, Oscar. Well, quite ironically, about an hour and a half ago, I got a call from a young lady here in Sacramento, Keith Wagner, who was on the show a couple weeks ago, referred her to me, and she was quite frantic. She's a mother of four, and one of her sons is suicidal, and she referred to me. Just so happens that Dr. Sunday on the panel, he has some experience in mental health, so he's going to talk to her later today and point her in the right direction. So that's what we are, you know. We're a service organization, you might say. But today we have a very special guest, Miss Michelle Hardy. Michelle is a Christian. She's a mother. She's a grandmother of three. She's written a book, so she's an author. She's a licensed bail bond agent. She's a inspirational speaker. She's a philanthropist, and she's a business owner. So she's a lot wrapped up into one, and on top of that, she's a very nice person. Michelle, would you just introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about yourself?
Hello, everyone. Thank you. Thank you for allowing me this opportunity to be on your platform. I really appreciate it. Just thankful. Thankful to be a part of it. Well, as Mr. Brooks said, I'm Michelle Hardy, and I'm a philanthropist, an author, mother, grandmother, bail agent. I do a lot. There's just so many different things that I do. It's just like, okay, which one, you know, when people ask me, it's like, well, what are you going to tell them that you do? You know? So, yeah. So, because it's a lot, and, I just have the drive to do things. And it wasn't always that way, but, you know, I come from a great family. I came from a middle class family, as you would say, quote unquote middle class. You know, we didn't really struggle. My parents, you know, grew up at a time where, you know, you were picking cotton or picking tobacco, right? And so they grew up during that time and not having much, but they wanted more, you know. And so they moved out to California and eventually had me, and then started bringing our family from Florida to here. And, you know, just a tight-knit family. I come from a family that was always doing things, just working. You know, they believed in working. You know, regular, like, government jobs or, you know, and staying on the job for a long time, right? You know, just always working. always doing something, you know.
Mm-hmm,
and
mm-hmm.
So that's where I come from, you know. My mother
mm-hmm.
was an aircraft electrician. My father was a mechanic. So, you know, you think ideally because of how I was raised that nothing would go wrong. But that's just the opposite, right? Just the opposite. So I got into drugs at one time and carrying a gun. And just, you know, was on a path of destruction. And but my family, they never gave up on me, you know. When I was about, I'd say 19 or 20, I hooked up with this guy, you know, your standard thing, hooked up with this guy and fell head over heels with him, and he was a drug dealer. And me, I was just naive to what I was getting into, you know. And so I started running the street. I started carrying drugs. I was doing drugs, you know. And then I had to carry this gun to protect myself, you know. So I'm going, staying in hotels with him, and just trying to watch my back so I don't get beat up or, you know, killed ultimately. And you know, my father, he kept telling me, you need to stop running with this guy, you know. But at this point, I'm just like, no, I love him. So he had to let go of my hand. And it was hard because I was close to my father. And so he had to let me be out there, you know. And but
mm-hmm.
he stripped me of everything. He took everything that he had given to me. He took it from me. Right? So
mm-hmm.
he had given me a car. One day he just swooped up at the guy's house, and he had another key to my car. So he took the car. Somebody ran in the house. They said, Michelle, some man ran over your car. I said, oh my goodness. And I could see my dad's head up in, you know, in the back of the window. I said, oh my goodness, you know. And so, you know,
no,
just to kind of show you where the mindset of the guy that I was with was, he was like, that's okay. I'll just give you another car. So the next day I had another car. And that was just basically to keep me, you know, to keep me. And so, you know, my dad just had
Michelle,
to take
Michelle,
everything from me.
Michelle, hold on just a second. Hey, guys,
okay.
I can hear you in the background. So could you just.
That's a question.
Okay, go ahead, Michelle.
Okay. Yeah, so my father, you know, he basically had to, you know, take all the things from me. And so I was just out there with the guy, right? So
right,
while
right.
I'm out there, I'm carrying this gun and just trying to stay safe, you know. But then the police are, you know, always watching you. And, you know, so you just kind of like on the run. You're carrying dope on you, you know, and just feeling, and see, I didn't grow up like this, so
right.
it was just kind of like not normal. It's just like I'm going against how I was raised, you know.
Was
so,
it stressful to you?
Yeah, it was very
was
stressful
it?
Because I wasn't, I mean, you know, I'm like only 19 at this point, right? So, you know, I grew up with this great family, and I'm just like, this ain't normal, but I'm out here. You know, and I'm on drugs, right? And I'm
uh-huh.
just doing the most with this guy. So,
right.
So eventually, I ended up getting pregnant by the guy, and so you know, I'm hanging out with him. So one particular day, I'm pregnant. I'm probably about 5 months pregnant, right? So I'm not talking to any of my family because as long as I'm with him, I can't come back to the house. I can't go back home. So this one particular day, I'm in the apartment, and he had left. The guy left, and he went somewhere. So I'm in there asleep. So there was a knock at the door, and his sister had came in the house, and she brought somebody that was related to the family, but they knew the guy's ex-wife, right? So this guy was married. He's a lot older than me. So he had an ex-wife. So he let them in. The sister let the people in to the house, and they beat me up. They beat me up. They knocked me all in the head. Now, I'm about 5 months pregnant, and I had twins. So they kicked me in the stomach. They poured water on me. They took all my clothes out the closet and was just throwing all the clothes on me, you know. So I had this knot on my head, you know. And I'm just like, I cannot, you know, at this point I'm crying, obviously, and I can't go home, you know. So
right.
I called my stepmother, and I told her I was crying. I said, can you come get me? And so she came. She pulled up to the place, and I told her, I said, don't tell my dad. I said, please don't tell my dad. So she took me to a shelter, and I stayed in the shelter until I got better, you know. And then I eventually moved to an apartment, to kind of get myself together. But I was struggling, you know, because I couldn't go back with him, and I had too much pride to go home. So
right.
I called my mother, and my mother came and got me. And I was still on the drugs. So I'm pregnant with these twins on drugs, right? So just a bad situation. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So my mother, she came and she just took me in, you know. She took me in and she just cared for me. And she just have so much love for me that, you know, it wasn't nothing for her to just take me in and nurture me back, you know, to just love me. Just love me. So I got better. I had the twins. And the twins are like 32 years old today, you know, and one of them got kids, yeah. And so, just a long journey. And so, you know, when the twins were like about 6 months old, I ended up getting me what they call a good job, a good state job, and just worked for the state for like 15 years, and I left and ended up having another child. I've had four children, but so along my journey, I done had some kids, right? But I ended up, you know, working for the state for like 15 years, and so now I'm an administrator for a contractor for the city of Oakland, and I own business. And like you said, I'm a licensed bail enforcement agent. So if people go to jail, I deal with that. And, I'm just thankful to God because my journey was just so, I had a good life. So it just shows you that you can grow up in a regular family. You know, you got good solid family, working people. They believe in working. They just close knit. You know, Southern people. You know, come from people who, like I said, picked cotton and tobacco, and you know, came out to California for a better life. And see how you can, you know, you can run into somebody and they can take you on another direction. But it's all choices. It's all choices. Mm-hmm. Those are choices that I made, but I have family that just, they made a choice to say, okay, we're going to have to let go of your hand because we're not going to let you be out here. You can't come to the house. because he's acting up. You know,
can't have
but
no double
man. No, you can't be doing all this stuff, right? Because I was a mess. You talk about I go in the store and I be stealing, right? All kinds of stuff. Just all kinds
well, you
of
know,
stuff.
Michelle, just to look at you now, I would never dream that your journey was had so many mm-hmm. twists and turns in it, you know. It just goes to show you that God can change anybody, you know, from any situation. They say with God, all things are possible.
Mm-hmm.
So one question mm-hmm. I would like to ask you is that, you know, we as elders are always looking for, you know, tips and tidbits. So what message would you give a young lady, you know, 19 years old or so forth, you know, that was maybe face the same situation that you faced? What would you say to her? What message would you give to her?
Right. Well, you know, we always say that you're enough, you know, and there's one thing that I always tell people so you can understand who you are, so you treat yourself well. So I was reading this book one time, and it was by a lady named Jeanine Roth. And she, in the book, it was about weight loss because I used to weigh a lot. And this is what I got out of it. She says, you know, basically, if God walked up to your door, what would you serve him? What would you serve God? And, I mean, that's huge, right? So, you know, you wouldn't ride down to McDonald's and get him like a number four, right? You wouldn't do that. You would not do that. You would. I mean, if steak is the ultimate or lobster or whatever, you would pull that out. You would pull all of that out. You wouldn't serve them on a paper plate, plastic fork. You would get out your best china. You would get out the napkins, not no paper napkin. You get out a cloth napkin and you fold it nice. And I mean, you would just be doing all that stuff because that's just how big God is. You know, you ain't going to just do him any kind of way. So if you do that for God, why won't you do that for yourself? Why won't you not wait, but pull out the best china? Not wait, you know, do it now. You know, what you saving the best china for? You know, if you're going to do that for God and God is in you, you know, you and God are one, bring the best china out. Bring the cloth napkin out. Set the table, and then you sit at the table. You sit at the table and you serve God. You serve him, and you serve him well. You do it with honor and integrity. You do that for yourself. You know, you wouldn't disrespect God. You wouldn't talk to God any old kind of way. You know, if you and God was walking down the street and somebody said something, you'd be like, wait a minute, hold up. What are you talking about? No, right? You'd be willing to fight for God because he's just that great. So you do that for yourself. You fight for yourself. You got clothes for God. You're going to iron the clothes. You're going to make sure that the clothes are clean for God. You know, you're going to make sure if you run his bath water, it's going to be so nice. It's going to be the perfect temperature.
Michelle, hold that thought. We got to make a quick announcement.
Okay.
Yes, this is the Council of Elders program. And if you would like to join the conversation, press 1. If you ask a question or you want to join the conversation or you want to get some information, press 1. Thank you.
Thank you, Oscar. Go ahead, Michelle.
Okay. And, yeah, so that's basically it as far as, you know, however you feel about God, that's how you treat yourself. And when you treat yourself well, people see that and they have no choice but to treat you that way because they know you're not going to do it any less than that. So they can't come to you and say, well, oh, I'm going to just, you know, do this. Like when you're serving yourself food, you know how some people say, well, oh, it's just got a little mold on it, you know, on the cheese. I can still eat this cheese. Well, no, you don't. No, no, you don't.
You're sick.
You know, that cheese is no more. And God is going to bring you more cheese. He's going to bring you more everything. So
right,
you don't
right.
serve yourself or you don't do less than what you would do for God. And
right,
as
right.
long as you keep doing yourself right, people will do you right. You notice how when you see somebody and they're not taking care of themselves, you know, people look at them like, oh, Lord. Oh, Lord, here they come, right? Because they want you
right.
to do well so they can treat you well, you know.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Like when I was doing bad, my parents was like, oh, no, no, you can't be up in here, no, you know. But once I start doing better, what do? They say, oh, okay, she want to do better. Let me let her back into the fold. Let me let her on back in. She's trying.
Right, right, right. So your parents, Their position was that they were there to help you if you wanted to help. How would you put their position? And as a parent, what can people do if they have a wayward child, a wayward young lady, a wayward son?
Well, we all got to learn our lessons. And so they let me learn. That's how I operate with my children. You know, well, you got to learn your lessons, you know, because
right,
you know, we're going to bump our heads. Right, ain't nothing perfect. We're going to bump our heads. So you just, you know, and I mean, you know, you can show them so much love. I could go home and get something to eat if I wanted to. You know, back then, if I was hungry, nobody was going to let me be hungry, you know. But you can't stay here, so you ain't going to let them be hungry. But, no, you can't stay in my house. You can't stay in my house because I can't trust you, right? So, but I'll make sure that, you know, you got some clean clothes, wash your clothes. I'll make sure that, you want a sack of potatoes. Here's a sack of potatoes, could fix you something or whatever. But,
right,
you know,
right.
until you get your mind right, you know, until you understand.
Right, Walter Williams, I can feel you want to say something.
Oh, yes, Michelle is absolutely right. Every kid has to go through it. We as parents, we can want and do the best that we can, but as I've said in the past, that God gave each and every one of us the same thing, and that is free will. And as parents, if we have a similar situation as Michelle has been talking about, only thing we can do is continue to love them. Continue to love them. Continue to be there for them, not as an enabler, but continue to be there for them and love, like Michelle. You know, always give them something to eat, some clothes, or put on something like that. But you don't have to enable them when you know that they are doing wrong. But you must continue to love them because God loves us in spite of ourselves. Thanks.
All right. Michelle, we got so much to talk about. But one thing that me personally, I'm kind of interested in, and maybe some of the other people that's listening might be interested in, is you wrote a book, and I'd like to talk a little bit about that and the process that you took in writing the book. So tell us a little bit about your book, and then we'll talk about, you know, in case somebody, the would-be authors out there listening, they might can get a couple tips on you on how to write a book.
Right. Okay, so just a little background. When I wrote my book, it was a short story, right? So it wasn't like a whole book. I didn't set out to write a book. I was writing poetry before. So just a whole book, like what? No, I don't have that much to say. I'm writing poetry. So it was just a short story that I had written many, many years ago, right? So I started doing random acts of kindness, right, and not really relating the random acts of kindness to my short story, you know, not even related. Right. And I've been doing that for years, you know. That's just in my spirit to give, you know, share. So somebody said, well, write a book. I said, well, I don't even know what else I'm going to say. Well, along this journey of me, and I'd just be sharing the story with people, and I would share something from the story. So I would give people this short story, and then something out of the story, I would give it to them, right? So there's teacups in the story. I talk about jewelry and silver and, you know, just vintage things. I talk about that. So I would give people stuff from, you know, and just so they have a story and then they have a little piece of the story. So,
right.
So along my journey, in my book, there's a lady that I wrote about, right? So along my journey, I meet this lady in my own life, right? Now, I done written the story, but I meet this lady, and she's doing the same thing that I had written about. And I hadn't even connected the two. I'm just going along. And so one day this lady calls me that I had given something. I had given her my little short story, and I had given her something from the story. And this lady says, oh, that's so wonderful that you go around and you give away stuff that lady gave you. And I just thought, what is she talking about, you know? And she thought it was real, right? At this point, I'm just like, this is fiction, you know? This story is fiction. And I didn't bother correcting the lady. But I started thinking, I said, Lord, did I really meet somebody in my life? And I'm like, you did meet somebody. You did meet this lady. So along my little journey, I met this lady. And she was, I'll call her auntie. And so she had been giving me things. She was, and what's so crazy is she was giving me the same things for my story. So the story that I had written, then
wow.
I meet this real lady in my real life, and she's giving me these things that I had written about, and not even putting it together. But it took somebody calling me, telling me that, right? So she was giving
right.
me silver. She was giving me stuff from her childhood. And I kept telling her, I said, don't give me this stuff. You know, I said, I don't got enough room to keep the stuff, right? So
right.
in my book, I'm just going to tell you, in my book, the lady died. In my real story, the lady died. And she left everything to this girl. Well, this real lady did the same thing to me, right? This real lady, she died. A couple of years ago, she died. And so my story that I had written started coming true to me, right? So that's as you speak it, so shall it be. As I had written it, originally written it, it manifested itself in my life with this real lady. And so I don't give away the things that the real lady gave me, but I find things at the thrift store, you know, and I still share my story, and I share something. So I still do that, but that just shows you how powerful God is and how you can speak something and it'll manifest. And so my life is like that. So I'm very mindful of what I say to you, who I hang out with, you know, who I deal with, because I know that I could say something this morning and it will happen at 12 o'clock. So my
wow.
whole life is like that, you know.
Mm.
So I'm very mindful of, you know, who I let in my house, you know, because if I'm going to be involved with you in some type of way, you know, whether it be business or what have you, I want to make sure that we get along, you know, or whatever,
mm-hmm.
you know, if friendship,
right.
you know, and if we don't
right.
mess, there's no need of me dealing with you because I'm not going to have a good feeling, right? I could say,
right.
I could be, somebody could have invited me to an event, and I could say, oh, Lord, I don't want to go to that event. Do you know the person called me and said, you know what, the event was canceled? I mean, it's just that profound for me. So
right.
I have to be really careful about what I say, what I do, how I think, what I write, because it will
right.
manifest itself, right? It will manifest itself. And that's just a gift God gave me, so I don't deal with it lightly, you know. I don't deal
right.
with it lightly.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Oh, no, you were going to ask me something. Go ahead, I'm just talking this
Yeah, way. I was just going to ask you the title of your book.
Okay, so it's called Mrs. Fields' Basement, A Beautiful, Magical Thing. So basically all the beautiful and magical, I wrote it, and then the lady was giving it to me, you know.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah.
Michelle,
yeah.
Can you tell us a little bit about, let's say if someone wants to write a book, what was your process for doing that?
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I mean,
when I got ready to, well, you know, it was a short story first, and then I had to add on to it. So then at that point, I said, well, what else am I going to write about? I was like, well, you might as well write about yourself. Now that it's coming true, you might as well just add some other stuff onto it, right? So
right.
So that was a painful process. It was very painful. So because the way I had written the story at first, it wasn't even because I had set the story in the early 1900s. So the language was different, right? So
right.
I had to use that same voice to continue the story. So just grabbing those words, and some of the words I didn't even know. So I had to go look up. And you know how you know what something is, but you don't know the name of the thing, you know?
Yeah.
Or like, yeah, because I talk about like, you know, those old toilets where they had the chain that you pulled from the top, and then you had a septic tank out back, you know, and you had to pour lye into, yeah. So I had to go look all that up. I had to look all that up, you know, because I'm just like, well, what do they call this thing? I know about it, but I don't, you know. So just all of that was painful, doing the research and what they call things, because I just didn't have the words in my vocabulary to talk about the thing. So that part, I wasn't really a researcher, you know, so doing that.
Right, Michelle, let me just interrupt a little bit, and let's tell our audience that we're listening to Michelle Hardy, and she currently lives in Northern California. So after you got everything, you know, situated and written out, did you have somebody to do your artwork or type it up for you? Or just how did you put it together?
Right. So I typed it all myself. So that's one skill that I got. Right. One skill I got. So I typed it all myself, and then I said I'm going to stay in my own lane. I'm not going to try to do everything myself. So I don't edit books. I don't lay out books. I'm not a photographer. I'm not any of that. So I stay in my own lane. I wrote the book. Let me get people to help me, right? So I started asking people, do you know somebody that can read my book and make sure that it makes sense? So I got a lady, I saw a lady online that I had met, and she had a beautiful book, and her book sold. I said, well, let me ask her what she did. So she referred me to Dr. Searcy, Dr. Christy Searcy. And I said, okay. So Dr. Searcy lives in, like, Georgia. So I said, well, okay, yeah, let me do that. So I did that. So then I said, well, I need somebody to lay it out. So I asked another friend. I said, you know somebody? Because this other lady had 8 books. I said, oh, yeah, well, she knows what she's doing, so let me ask her. So she turned me on to another lady that was, like, in Arkansas somewhere, right? So then that lady laid out my book. I had another person who I saw online who was a photographer. I said, oh, I said, I'm going to ask him to take the pictures for my book. So he took the pictures. So I just got these different people that I knew, they knew how to do that thing, and I asked them for help. And I did my book in stages. It's not like I had all the money at the time. So I said, okay, I'm going to do this one part. Then the next month, I'm going to do this next part. Then the next month, I'm going to do this part, right? So I did it in stages. And then after that, then I said, okay, I got to publish it. So then I just started looking for people who could publish it at the price that I could afford. Because I said, okay, and the one thing about that, about publishing a book, you say, this is the budget I have. This is how much money I have. What can you do for me? That's what I told each one of those people. I was willing to only spend so much money for this thing that I needed. And I said,
right,
I have this money. What? How much can you give me for that? And so thank God they all did it for what I was willing to spend, right? What I knew that I had. I wasn't trying to be at the mercy of all these people, right?
Then
I got the publisher, and the publisher, I said, okay, this is all I want to spend. And so they told me what they could give me, and I said, okay. So I got the book, and I sold them, right? And then I sold out of them, and then I went and I got some more books, right? So, so it was just like that. I did it based on the money that I had. I knew I was willing to spend, and I found people to help me that already had done what I wanted. I wasn't trying to go and just ask anybody. Let me get the expert for that, and doing it afraid. That's the big thing, doing it afraid. And then, you know, people don't want to release a book because they hold on to their book for so long because they feel like people are going to judge them for what they said because that's their truth. That's their true self in that book. You have to release that. You have to let that go.
Right.
You know, let go of whether the comma was in there or not. Let go of, oh, I said this wrong, or who's somebody going to feel some kind of way when they read what's in my book. That don't matter. This is your book, not everybody else's book. So just remember all of that. The person that's editing it, they're editing it for it to make sense. Once they say, yeah, it makes sense, okay, let's go. That's where you settle with my book is finished. Then you say, okay, I want it to look pretty. Okay, let's go. All right, and then be okay with when the person gives you the layout of the book and you done gave it back to them about two or three times, it's done. It's done. Because I guarantee you, when you print that book and it has the barcode on it and all of that, you're going to find a comma that wasn't supposed to be there. You're going to find a question mark where it should have been a period. You are going to find somebody's name misspelled that helps you with the book, right? But the thing is that you have different prints of your book. So the next time you do the next print, you correct it. You correct it. And you apologize or whatever, but you just keep on going. It's not going to be perfect. And release the idea it is perfect. It's your baby. And you got to release your baby at some time. You got to let them go, you know.
Right.
So you can do whatever you got to do, right? So just be okay with it's not a perfect thing, but it's your thing. But just go on and you know, cause, and then whatever you didn't put in the first book, you can have another one. You can say, okay, this is the second one. This is the second book.
Right.
And this is the third book, and this is the fourth book, and blah, blah, blah. Or like I said, revision. Right. Yeah.
Right. Well, what you were saying about it doesn't have to be perfect, that can apply to a lot in your life. You know, sometimes we wait until the situation is perfect, you know, before you try something. And, you know, the situation may never be perfect, so you just got to step out on faith and do it, you know? So what you were saying about, you know, putting the book together, it applies, it has a application to other areas in your life. So that's interesting. You know what? Tell us a little bit about your work as a bail bondswoman.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I had only gotten into bail because I was a notary, right? So I worked in San Francisco, and to kind of cut it short, you know, because I know we don't have much time, but I worked in San Francisco, and I got laid off. But while I was in San Francisco at this particular job, they wanted me to be a notary. And so when you have a notary's license, you take it with you. The job doesn't keep it. Even though they paid for everything, you take it. It's yours, right? So
right.
I had this notary, and I was looking for to do notary. And so I went into this bail office, and I told the people, I want to do notary. So they said, okay. They said, well, you come, you know, we'll call you. So what I did, I just sat in the Starbucks around the corner from the bail office, and they would call me, and I would do the notary. So while I was in there, the guy was teaching me about bail. He was just talking, you know, and I'd just be listening. So he's like, you know, you need to do the bail. You already a notary. You could be doing both. I said, well, okay. So I did it. I just, you know, just because I was doing that, and I was sitting in the office, and I tell you, I would do it, but it was painful for me to do that because bail is a ruthless business. You know, it's very competitive. You know, everybody want to get your bail because, you know, you ain't just getting bailed out for, you know, $20. This is thousands of dollars, you know. The average bail is probably $50,000. You know, this bail is a lot. So, so that's how I got into it. And so... but I knew that that was not my total makeup because I didn't like being ruthless. I didn't like that. It didn't set well with my heart. But I said, well, I done went through the trouble of getting a license. I'm not going to just let it go. So I maintained my license, and the same guy that I was working with in the office, when I get a call, like at midnight, I call him. And I call him, and I tell him, okay, I have a bail. And he does all the stuff, you know. He does it all. Oh. So I don't really have to do much, you know. I'm more like a referring people, you know, and I'll benefit on the back end, right? So,
right.
You know, yeah. And I get
so
calls from all kinds of
people. If a person has a notary license, mm-hmm. I guess there's various opportunities that can open up for them.
Right. Now, you can make a whole living out of doing notaries because the maximum you could charge is like $10. Now, I'm not a licensed notary now, but I still have my bail license. But with notary, yeah. I mean, you could charge them $10 for one signature on the page. So just say it's four people signing that notary, signing that paper to be notarized. That's $40 that person made off of one piece of paper. Now, when you're doing documents like house, you know, you're buying a house and all that, the notary is making a lot of money because there's a lot of documents to sign and notarize. So some people just make a living around traveling and notarizing papers. And $10 per signature they can charge you. Plus they can charge you for travel, you know. So
right.
it's definitely a business, and not a lot of people are notaries. The test is harder than the bail test.
Oh, okay.
That's the thing. Yeah, and you have to be bonded. You have to be bonded for all of this. So you have to have a bond on your own head, you know, just in case you
right.
act up. There's a bond, so, you know, not only, you know, in bail you have to have that because you're dealing with insurance, you know, policies, basically. So if you do something wrong, you got to have money to get your own self out of jail. So can you be bonded, right? Yeah.
Right, right.
So that's a thing. Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
You're listening
yeah.
to
yeah,
the Council of Elders program? Council
I'm
of
sorry?
Elders program. You're listening to the Council of Elders program, and we have 10 minutes left. If anybody would like to join the conversation, press 1.
But we're listening to Michelle Harding, and she has a very interesting life story. So please keep listening, because you're going to hear something that's going to bless you.
All right, Michelle, I know you've got another call today. You've got a 10:50 right now for another 5 minutes or so. But I want to thank you for coming on the show today and sharing with us. Let me ask you this.
Mm-hmm.
As far as your advice to younger people, young ladies in particular, just share with us a little bit more before you have to leave us a few words of your wisdom.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, when I was speaking earlier about God and how you reverence yourself, you know, as far as treating yourself well, that, for me, that's what I'm always going to tell somebody, to give them an idea of how they should be treating themselves, respecting themselves, caring themselves. You know, all I can say is just keep trying to do something. You see how I got off the path, raised in a great family, got off the path, and then somebody still loved me, somebody still cared for me, so they said, okay. And then I was able to get my bearings, you know, and then just grow from there and go from there, you know. And I'm not saying that along this journey of where I started doing better, that it wasn't hard. I didn't make any mistakes, you know, because I surely made some. I left that state job. I left the job, right? It's like, how do you leave a good job? Right? I couldn't tell nobody I left that job. I just had to just go. I had to go because I knew where my heart was at as far as being free to do what I wanted to do. You know, I love business, love that whole idea of, you know, working for myself, being able to control my pay, being able to say, ask for what I want and then somebody give it to me instead of being, you know, limited to, you know, the state has like different levels, right? You know, of pay.
Mm-hmm.
Once you reach this, okay, then, you know, we'll see if you get this. I didn't like that. I wanted to be able to say, I want you to pay me $30 an hour, or I want you to pay me this, you know. And then I was willing to walk away if people didn't pay me, right? I've done that.
Right.
Oh, you want to pay me $15? Well, no. Matter of fact, I want $30. I want $30.
Mm-hmm.
I've done that. Walked away, and they called me and said, okay, we'll pay you, right? So I quit a job to do that. So you got to be real sure about who you are, your ability, and when I did that, I was standing on how much God loves me. That's all I had was, you know, I'm making $15 an hour, and I'm asking you for $30. I was a secretary. And I was asking for that. And I said, you know what? God loves me. And I know how powerful God is. And I'm going to stand on this. I got skills. I got something. I got God. So I am going to stand on that. And I don't know. I didn't even have another thing in my hand. I just knew that I was valuable. And I deserve to be paid more because I had bills. I had things I had to pay. So I'm going to leave these people where I'm comfortable. I know the job blindfolded. I'm going to leave them, and I'm going to trust God, right? So just trust God for everything, everything that you want. You trust God, and it will work. It will work. I'm proof of that. Right? That's my show.
Right.
You've been on the show before. Proof that God exists. I am definitely that. From where I come from to today, you know,
right,
I shouldn't
right,
be
right.
here. That gun I told you I had almost shot myself in the foot, or it could have been worse. I thought the safety was on, it wasn't. I'm just messing with the gun, you know? I'm just like, oh, yeah, Lord, they had to take the gun from me.
Toting the gun.
I know. It was a little 22 in my purse, right? I had the gun. You know, the gun was, the purse was just flipping and flopping because it was the gun in there and some dope. It was a mess. Right? Oh, my goodness.
Right.
Yeah. Didn't have a pocket to put it in, so I'm putting it in the purse. But, yeah.
Right.
So just always remember God. Just, I mean, you know, if you don't believe in God, whatever you want to call your higher power, the source, you know, whatever you want to call what you reference. You rely on that, something that you cannot see. You rely on that, you know, and keep it in your heart. Whatever it is that you want, keep it in your heart always. Whatever it is you want, put it up, make you a vision board and put the stuff up there, you know. I put on my vision board I wanted to write a book. I put on there I wanted to make a movie. I wanted to give gifts to God's people. I wanted to be authentic to my, you know, for myself. I done wrote a book. I've been giving to God's people, doing random acts of kindness. I'm working on an animated movie right now. You know, the storyboard is almost done. So my book,
right?
So I'm checking stuff off my vision board, and I keep it right where I sit every day. I've got it in my face. It's in my face, the vision. And I even add little stuff. I say, oh, yeah, but I want to do that. Let me put that on the board, too, you know. And I don't know when it's going to happen, you know. We all want stuff to happen now, but just put it on there. Put it on there and just let it be and work. Do your part towards whatever
you
it
have
is.
3 minutes.
And it will manifest. Yeah.
Okay.
Do your part. Yeah.
Would you prepare to close us out, Mr. Brooks? We have 2 minutes and 35 seconds.
Okay, sure. Well, Michelle, we could talk for hours. Your wisdom is fantastic. Your journey is very enlightening. Thank you for being on the show today. Quickly, you want to give your website or your contact?
Okay, well, you can always find me on Facebook at, you know, just look for Michelle Tamiko Hardy, and that's M-I-C-H-E-L-L-E, Tamiko, T-A-M-I-K-O, Hardy, H-A-R-D-Y, you know. So that's basically, start with Facebook, and you'll find it, yeah.
Okay, all right. Well, hey, listen, thank you for being on the show today. I really appreciate it. I know that some people who are listening are going to be blessed. So thank you, Michelle.
All right. Okay,
talk
take care.
Soon.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you.
Okay,
all right,
bye-bye.
We got a couple of minutes. As I said, I got a call today from a lady here in Sacramento who is going through some things. And although we're not fully established, you know, as many members of the Council of Elders as I would like, but we do have some people who I think that I can refer her to, because her son has some mental health problems. We got about a few more seconds here, so I'd just like to say thank you, everybody, for tuning in today. Thanks to Mr. John Brown for helping us out today, and also Oscar Besant. And tune in next week. We'll be here. I have Mr. Randy Carter on next week. He's going to be a good, interesting guest as well. So goodbye, everybody, and thanks for tuning in today.
In it. Yes.
It's in my heart.